Then the saintly sannyasi asked, "You speak of a thing, vastu. What does this word mean?" The Paramahamsa replied, "The word vastu is derived from the verb vas, to exist, and the affix tu. Therefore, that which exists is called vastu. There are two kinds of vastus, things that exist in reality and things that do not exist in reality. What exists in reality are spiritual truths and the spiritual goal of life. What does not exist in reality are material objects, material qualities, and the like. What exists in reality exists in truth. What does not exist in reality exists only in someone's mistaken belief. When a person believes something, it may be that what he believes is the truth, or it may be that it is only an illusion. Srimad Bhagavatam 112, it is said, Vedyam Vastava Matra Vastu Shivadam. The highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. In this way it is proved that the world of spirit is the true reality. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the only reality. From him the many individual spirit souls who are all his parts and parcels are manifested. And from him also the potency of illusion, Maya, is also manifested. Therefore the word thing, vastu, may be applied to three things. 1. The Supreme Personality of Godhead. 2. The individual spirit souls. And 3. The illusory potency, Maya. These three things exist in reality. Knowledge of the relationships that exist between these three things is said to be pure knowledge. And so this is what's called Sambandha Gyan. That understanding these three and their relationships, this is the basis of knowledge. It means from that, everything else can progress. Because otherwise, one doesn't have a strong, one doesn't really know what's going on. You may have the sentiment to want to do something. So in the beginning, that's okay. And that's good that that sentiment is there. And it should remain and grow. But if one doesn't understand the relationships between things, how are we going to be sure that we're always going to act properly? Otherwise, the tendency may be, is in our sentiment, we may do anything. Right? Sentiment is there today, it may be applied properly today, due to our sincerity and that, and so Krishna arranges that it works, just like the sannyasi. He didn't know Vaishnav etiquettes. He knew etiquette, you know, basic Vedic etiquette, but he didn't know the finer aspects of the Vaishnava etiquette. But when he met the spiritual master, other spiritual master, then he was behaving very properly and offering his obeisances and, you know, properly dealing. That's because of his sincerity. But if we become a little proud of our good, you know, abilities and good fortune, then that insincerity then may get in our way, and then we may do all kinds of strange things. In the name of religion, in the name of, you know, spirituality. Therefore, one has to know this Sambandha Gyan. It has to be cultivated along with. Then you know who you are, who is God, what is the material energy, what is the relationship. So that is important, the Sambandha Gyan. What is the relationship between my hand and Krishna? My hand and myself? You know, what's the floor in Krishna, floor in myself? You know? Or the floor in, you know, the floor in Krishna. You know, right? So you have to understand all these things. As we understand, then we're able to act. Otherwise, we may do all kinds of things that may or may not be proper according to the philosophy or the culture. It means it's wrong with the culture, means it's actually wrong with the philosophy. If it's wrong with the philosophy, it will naturally be wrong in the culture. We have a tendency not to do properly. So these three things, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the individual spirit souls, and the illusory potency Maya, these actually exist. The Mayavadis will say, none of these, there's only Brahman, there's only one thing that exists. The Vaishnavas understand that there are three things that exist. But the illusion is that we do not understand these three and what is their relationship. Does that make sense? Any questions? No. No. It means he's taking step by step, so these things will be the basis of future discussions. So if this... So in other words, yeah, by not understanding these relationships, we have ideas about something, who we are, or what is God, what is this material energy. And so that creates the illusion. Because we create the illusion. Like that. The thing exists, but what it actually is, that's another thing. You know, what it is in reality. Reality means in its relationship with the Lord. That's the reality of the thing. Okay. Continuing here. There are many different conceptions of the true natures of these three things. These conceptions tend to be full of errors. The Vaisheshika philosophers, in their categorization of things and qualities, believe to be true many things that are not true. Things that exist and true have specific attributes. These attributes determine their nature. The individual spirit soul exists in truth. The individual spirit souls have specific attributes that are eternal. These determine the natures of the individual souls. Okay, so here he's saying that the different philosophies, the reason they give different ideas, because they understand these three things differently. They have their own ideas of what is the soul, or there is no soul. Like Vaisheshika, his idea is everything comes from matter. All there is atoms. So there is the atom, and then you put a lot of atoms together, then you get something. You get a chair or a table like this. And then you can take the chair or table apart back into its atoms. So that's what is correct. But he thinks that's the basis of everything. He doesn't know that the atoms have come from somewhere, and that there's a soul inside the living body, therefore it's acting. So it's like the modern scientists. So it's, they have their own idea about this, the relationships of sambandhagyan. So they don't really know what they're talking about. Therefore it's illusion. Therefore, the different persons, as they talk about religion, they give different answers because they're in illusion. They don't know how to distinguish matter from spirit. Then the saintly sannyasi said, "O Master, I yearn to understand this properly." Then the saintly Babaji said, "A devotee named Krishnadas Kaviraj, who has received the mercy of Lord Nityananda, showed me a manuscript of a book he had written, a book named Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. In that book, Madhya 20, 108 and 117, Sri Mahaprabhu gives this instruction. Jivir Surupoi Krishner Nityadas Krishner Tatasta Shakti Veda Veda Prakash. It is the living entity's constitutional position to be an eternal servant of Krishna because he is the marginal energy of Krishna and a manifestation simultaneously one and different from the Lord. Krishna Bhuli Se Jiva Anadi Bahirmukh Ata Eva Maya Tare Deya Samsara Duk. Forgetting Krishna, the living entity has been attracted by the external feature from time immemorial. Therefore, the illusory energy, Maya, gives him all kinds of misery in this material existence, in his material existence. Lord Krishna is the totality of spiritual existence. He is like a sun from which many spiritual universes have come. The individual spirit souls are rays of light from that Krishna sun. There are many individual spirit souls. Someone may say, "You say that the individual spirit souls are parts of Lord Krishna. This means that when he is broken up to become the individual spirit souls, Krishna ceases to exist. This is like a mountain that is broken up into many parts. When it is broken in this way, the mountain ceases to exist." To this I reply, "You cannot speak in that way." If my opponent then protests, "Why not?" Then I reply, "From Lord Krishna, limitless individual souls are manifested as parts and parcels. Still, Lord Krishna is not diminished even slightly because of that. In all the Vedas, it is said that the individual souls are like sparks emanating from the blazing fire of Lord Krishna. However, none of these comparisons gives a completely accurate picture of the real truth. The examples of the great fire and the spark, the sun and the ray of light, and the alchemist's stone and gold do not describe the entire situation. Therefore, rejecting these material analogies, one should look inside his heart, and there he will understand the truth of the soul's nature. Lord Krishna is the great spiritual being, and the living soul is the infinitesimal spiritual being. Lord Krishna and the individual soul are one in the sense that they are both spiritual. However, Lord Krishna is the complete whole, and the individual wholes are only parts of the whole. That is the difference between them. Lord Krishna is the Supreme Master eternally, and the individual spirit soul is his servant eternally. In this way, their natures are described. Lord Krishna is the Supreme Attractive, and the individual soul is attracted to him. Lord Krishna is the Supreme Controller, and the individual spirit soul is controlled by him. Lord Krishna sees all, and the individual spirit soul is observed by him. Lord Krishna is perfect, and the individual soul is poor and lowly. Lord Krishna is all-powerful, and the individual soul is powerless. Therefore, the eternal nature or religion of the individual soul is to be a faithful servant of Lord Krishna eternally. Krishna being the whole, meaning he's the whole including the living entities, so even though they're separated, he still includes them. Otherwise, how is he the whole? If you have a mountain and you take it apart, like they give the example, then that means the mountain is not the whole. Because as you separate the individual rocks, it disappears, so the mountain isn't the whole. So if it's the whole, it means you can separate all the rocks and the mountain's still there. That means it's the whole. But the individual rocks are individual rocks. So the individual souls are individual. But Krishna is the whole. You can separate unlimited living entities, and still he's the complete whole. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purna Purnamudachyate. So it's as you separate, he stays the same. Because he is the whole. So that means he's outside of all that. So even though they're separated, he's still bigger than that. So even though they're separated, they're still within him. It's just a matter of whether they're manifest or we can understand it or not. But otherwise, he is bigger than the biggest. Otherwise, how is Mother Jashoda not able to put the rope around Krishna? How she can put a rope around the cosmic manifestation? So that is the point. Therefore, he says you have to look within oneself. There has to be faith. There has to be some understanding God exists. Then he will reveal this. Otherwise, on our own, our intelligence, if we are limited, then that means our intelligence is limited. Like that. So the material intelligence cannot understand.
Can I just say looking within means
study,
talking faith?
Yeah, basically. It means one has to observe the spirit soul. So here he sees that, means if we look at it, then all these qualities, Krishna is great, he's very small, he's powerful, and the living entity is not, he's powerless. No. Krishna is perfect, the living entity is not. So its duty is serving Krishna. That's its natural position. That's the natural. Krishna is attractive, the living entity is attracted to Krishna. Right? Means that's all there is in this world, is Krishna. So a living entity is attracted, to this material energy because Krishna has entered it. But the living entity, due to his lack of proper understanding, takes the material world to be what's attractive. So that's the illusion. Material energy is not attractive. It's dead matter. So there's nothing attractive about it. But we see Krishna in the material energy, we are attracted by Krishna in that form, and we think it is that what we are seeing, that that's what's attractive. Like we have a flower is attractive. Why? Because Krishna all Krishna is all beautiful. So some of his beauty has been empowered in that flower. So we see the flower, we're attracted. What we're attracted by is Krishna's beauty that has entered that flower, but we think it's the flower. But it's not. So that's the illusion, that we think the flower is beautiful because it is something on its own. But it's beautiful because Krishna has entered it. So that potency of Krishna has entered the flower, therefore it's beautiful. Krishna's potency of like strength has entered a rock or a pillar, therefore it's strong. Like that. Krishna's potency of intelligence may have entered a living entity, therefore we say they're very intelligent. But it's not the person's intelligence, it's Krishna's, it's his potency. So that's the difficulty, is that in this world, then we mistake what is there as something else. Maya, that which is not. So it's Krishna. Right? Therefore, then we deal with it as Krishna is wants us to deal with it. Therefore, the Vedic culture and all the rules and regulations. Because we're attracted by Krishna in that particular form of the material energy. So what we're attracted to is Krishna. So now Krishna in that form wants to be dealt with in a proper way. That's the culture. That's the rules. Right? So we have to deal with Krishna in that way. So therefore, you know, the flower is beautiful. So it can be used in the way of beauty. So therefore it's used for decorating, you know, these kind of things. That's how we deal with it. Krishna's potency of power is not there. So therefore we don't take the rose and then put it on the foundation of the house and think that that will hold up the house. No, we will take a brick or a rock, because that has that potency of Krishna's strength. We will put that at the foundation of the house. Right? So we have to, in other words, it's the way that we're dealing with Krishna, but through the energy in which he's manifesting it. Is this understood? Yeah.
I'm trying to understand what purity actually means. You're saying that the contamination is illusion. And then you speak of a platform called Brahma Bhuta, where the living entity is above the modes of material nature. So what's the remaining contamination between that platform and the platform and the Swarup becomes manifest?
Well, the Brahma Bhuta and the Swarup basically are manifest around the same time. It means then one can actually, even though it's just like here, the sannyasi may understand what is that, but how much he can operate it, that's another thing. So one has to come to that. Here, if it's mentioned he's Paramahamsa, so it would appear that he is on the Brahma Bhuta platform, so then maybe he's able to operate it. You know, just like we know that we're servant of Krishna, but we're not operating it necessarily so nicely. As we become purified, we may understand more of what that means. You know, now we have an idea that we want to serve Krishna in the realm of Vrindavan. So that makes it more specific of us as servants. We're servants of Krishna, but so are all living entities and all realms. But within the realms, we want to serve within Vrindavan. Right? So then that becomes more clear. So means the, how do you say? Okay, another aspect then. The sixth of the means you have all the aspects of Shraddha Prema, those are manifest from the beginning all the way to the end. There's Shraddha there in the beginning, but its most mature state is Prema. That is where the maturity of that faith is reposed. Or the association of devotees, that is the fullest manifest on the platform of Prema. Because then one really knows how to associate. bhajana kriya, the following the proper activities, that's the most perfectly manifest in prema. So at all stages in between, all of these are manifest. So then in anartha, then it has six aspects. So the sixth of them is, though one is getting proper results, one is attached to those results, to, you know, enjoy something oneself from them. So we see that the living entity may be on that platform, that Brahma-Buddha platform, and the result of that is the spiritual facilities that come. Right? It means the living entities are there in Braja Vrindavan, in the Lord's eternal pastimes. But they are very happy with the lifestyle that's there. Right? So there's still some attraction, but it's not to the material. It's to the spiritual. So they're actually kind of, in a very subtle way, wanting to enjoy or take advantage of the facilities of the spiritual world. So there, you know, they have very, very nice, I mean, Vrindavan is the nicest place. You know, wonderful cows and wonderful homes and everything's the most wonderful. But there's some attraction, you know, in following all those activities of the household ashram. So therefore they get attached to the children, they get attached to their duties, get attached to so many things. They're spiritual things that they're getting attached to, but they're not getting attached to them in the actual proper way. So we see that that's still that aspect of, what is it, Taranga Rangini. Right? Yeah, so that aspect is there, even though it's on that such high platform. But we're talking something very different than on the lower platform when we're talking about in anartha nivritti. You know, when we call the stage of anartha nivritti, before nishta, is that you're talking about gross things there. You know, it's like, you know, some facilities come. Let's say one has a position. So with that position goes, let's say, an office and some facilities and a car and a place to stay. So we get attached to those things and we try to enjoy those things. So that's the grosser manifestation of that. So here is, along with this, you know, our conditioned nature is dealing with these. Now here they're beyond that, but still they haven't developed their love for Krishna, always remembering Krishna. So they're becoming distracted by that. You know what I'm saying? Therefore, when one crosses prema, then one is completely situated. One can't fall from there. Because then one is just fully in love with Krishna, fully going towards Krishna. There is no distraction. But before that, there may be some. So even if spiritual, even they're in a practically spiritual form, you know, and in spiritual situation, everything's spiritual, but they're still attracted to enjoy that. In a sense, so there's still that touch. This will come up later, I think in the next chapters. The touch that I am enjoyer. Therefore, the point of I am servant is always being driven in. We may say, oh, that's a basic point, I already know that. Yes, we intellectually know that, but if we realized it, it would completely change our whole, the material existence for us would disappear, simply with this one thing. Is in the mind, if you take out I am enjoyer and put in I am servant, and therefore that's how you accept and reject anything, then you'd be a pure unalloyed devotee. But because we still have the idea that I am enjoyer in that spot, therefore we're going to see, accept and reject everything based on I am enjoyer. So it's good for me, not good for me. You know? Therefore, they do their householders, oh, it's very good for me, it's very nice. I get a nice, you know, pious situation, it's nice. Everybody deals with me nicely. Like this. So, therefore, it's very subtle, like that. Because here it's more gross, and there it goes up to subtle. But the idea is we understand these principles, so that we're always aware of them. That's why you can have somebody who's very advanced, and they'll be saying, I'm very fallen. Because they're very aware of these, so they see maybe the smallest, slightest thing, which for us is nothing, but for them may be very great. Right? it is. Okay. So this. Okay. Any other question? Therefore, the eternal nature or religion of the individual soul is to be a faithful servant of Lord Krishna eternally. So there he's concluded what is the actual religion based on the eternal religion. Lord Krishna is the master of limitless potencies. All these potencies are perfectly manifested in the spiritual world. For the manifestation of the individual souls, one particular potency, the Tatastha Shakti, is employed. The imperfect material universes are also manifested by one of the Lord's potencies. That is the same potency called Tatastha Shakti. This potency creates a world where spiritual beings and inanimate matter stay together in the same realm. In this way, it creates a kind of relationship between the spiritual world and the material world. Spirit, which is conscious and pure, and matter, which is inanimate, are opposites. Therefore, it is not really possible for the conscious spirit soul to have a relationship with unconscious and inanimate matter. The individual soul is a small particle of spirit. Nevertheless, one of the Supreme Lord's potencies makes some individual souls somehow have a relationship with matter. The potency that does this is called Tatastha Shakti. The place that exists between a river's water and the dry land is called Tata, shore. Such a place touches both land and water. In that place between land and water, the attributes of both land and water are manifested. The individual soul is spiritual. Nevertheless, a spiritual soul may be placed under the control of inanimate matter. Thus, the living soul is not like the spiritual world, which never comes into contact with the material world, nor is the individual soul like inanimate matter. In this sense, the individual soul is neither spirit nor matter. That is why it is true that the Supreme Personality of Godhead and individual spirit souls are different beings eternally. The point is the living entities are Tatastha Shakti. So they're in between the spiritual and the material. There's something that has they can be influenced by both. So therefore, the principle is always given of iron and fire. It's when the iron is in the fire, it's like fire. So if the living entity is always in the fire of the internal potency, it's like the internal potency. Like that. So it's considered non-different. But if it's not in that fire, then it's not. It'll take on the qualities of Maya. It won't be something separate. It means it's. So therefore, the Lord and the living entities are eternally different. That's the point that is being made here, from that aspect. It means there are points that are made to that are tattva that help us understand the relationship and break us away from matter, or break us away from improper understandings, of the Lord or the material energy of ourself. So this is one of those. Then there are those ones that bring together. Right? Here is how to distinguish between them. And that is necessary to break something. It means if we take something apart, it loses its attractiveness. Like you may have some nice, like we have this nice computer, and then if we take it apart and spread it all over this room and point out each little part, it loses its attractiveness. You take a nice car, it looks very attractive and nice, and we take it all apart down to every last nut and bolt and put it all out, it loses that attractiveness. So that's the whole thing, is we take this material world and all these different things that we are used to dealing with and take it completely apart down to all its little components, so we lose the attraction. But that's not enough. That's just what the Mayavadis, the impersonalists, do, is they just break it apart until it loses its attraction. But the other side is that this is the "I'll never forget Krishna," you know, because we break apart the material world so that we give up the material world. Then there's the, we have to become attracted to Krishna. That's why then, along with this side, there must be the cultivation of the attraction to Krishna. Right? So, therefore we see Bhagavad Gita is there and Krishna book is there. Bhagavad Gita breaks us away from the material world, Krishna book attracts us to the transcendental, to Krishna. So that these two go together. So we don't forget, one is so that we remember. So these points are being made to make that point, and that's what they're for. They shouldn't be used otherwise. Okay.
So is this sambandha jnana that's used for attraction?
Basically, yeah. It's there. Sambandha jnana is... Sambandha jnana is to create the basis for the attraction. But its main thing is to make us understand our position in the material world, Krishna's position, so that we give up our false understanding. Like that. So it's more to establish the proper religion and to make that basis of relationship, create an attraction for Krishna. But it has a dual function. It breaks us away from the material world, loses the attraction this side, and attracts us towards Krishna. Right? But the actually drawing towards Krishna, the attachment to Krishna, that's another thing. That's the prayojan. Right?
Sometimes we see that some devotees who very much cultivate this sambandha jnana, and then they kind of drift away, because maybe that's the reason, because there's not so much.
There's no taste. It means the knowledge is, this is what is called, this is the meaning of the jigyasu. They're inquisitive. They intellectually are interested, so they're intelligent and hear something interesting, so they check into it and it looks nice, and they may get very involved in it and all that, but as soon as that kind of intellectual thing is done, then they move on to another intellectual thing. So, because the taste is not there, and it must move. See, intelligence is coming from passion. So it must move, it must be engaged, it must create some activity, it must do something. So that's the thing. So unless the mind is attracted, right? You know, so therefore we'll say the heart. That's in the mode of goodness. That can last. That can be steady. But just attracting only in the intelligence can't be steady, because it's coming from passion. So that's an important point. Therefore, it's always that point of remember Krishna and not forget. Right? So the mind is actually... We're using the intelligence to control and get the mind to remember Krishna. Because the mind is attracted by so many other things, so we have to use the intelligence that being attracted to material things is not good. So in this way we control. Therefore the intelligence is considered the controlling factor. You know, it is the controller of the situation, control of the senses, because the senses are coming out of passion also. So the intelligence is controlling the mind, therefore the senses are controlled. So it'll say, he said that the intelligence is the higher principle. But the what one is trying to do is get the mind to be attracted to Krishna. Because once that happens, then without the intelligence, one is just attracted and drawn to Krishna. It's not an intellectual thing anymore. Then it's the actual desire. Because desire is the main thing. So the intelligence, its function is to control the mind when it's not properly engaged. But when the mind is properly engaged, then the intelligence doesn't, on the mundane platform, it has no function. That's why it says, not by gyan can you get bhakti. It simply makes it favorable so that the mind can get the proper association and become attracted to Krishna. If it's always doing nonsense, it'll continue its attraction there. But if it's controlled by the intelligence, then one does things. One chants, one associates with devotees, one sees the festivals, one takes prasad. And in those situations, one may appreciate the taste of the name, of the prasad, of the service to the devotees, service to the deity, the benefits of the dham, the glories of the dham. So then the mind gets attracted by those. And then that's what you're trying to get. It's not just the intellectual. That's why sometimes it's thought, oh, I study everything, know everything, and then that makes the advancement. No, that's very helpful for the advancement, but that itself is not the real test of advancement. In the beginning it may be, because one is becoming steady. Right? But that steady in one's sadhana and these kind of things, and understanding the philosophy. But the real thing is this, the positive side, right? It means you have to get out of the negative, to the neutral point to get to the positive. So steadiness means the neutral point. But the real advancement is when that taste comes. The mind likes to do this, it likes to chant, it likes to worship the deity, it likes to live in the Dhamma, it likes to associate with devotees, it likes to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Then that's something solid. That's the taste. Right? Therefore, Nama Ruchi. Right? That's the third of the important aspects. You have to have a taste. So Jiva Doya is there, so you're understanding the position, explaining to others, bringing up the preaching, the Samanda Gyan, establishing relationships. But in that relationship, there should be a taste. Therefore, Namaruchi. There's no taste, what's the meaning of the relationship? There should be a taste for that. If you say you have a relationship with somebody, there must be something live there, some taste. You just say a relationship and there's no taste, it means it's not really a relationship. Relationship means taste will come. So if there's attraction, if there's understanding of the relationship, there's attraction. And if there's attraction, there'll be attachment. Right. And then, if there's attachment, then you're going to do something. Right. So therefore, Vaishnava Seva. Right. In the association of devotees, one's going to serve the Lord. Okay, so that was time. Otherwise it gets light. It gets late. We will all turn into pumpkins. Srila Prabhupada ki. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki. Samavita Bhaktivinoda ki. Jai Nitya Gaur. Thank you.